Despite the desperate efforts on the part of much of the mainstream media to generate endless headlines of conflict and drama, with the goal being continued ratings and revenue, it's inevitable that for many Americans, the endless political season is fast becoming just background noise. That's tragic, since the stakes are so high and the issues so real, but I have to confess that there are some evenings I just say to myself, I can't take it again tonight, and turn on something else. For a look at what's been happening and whether we ought to be paying even more attention, I'm joined once again by Greg LaBelle, Assistant Professor of Political Management at George Washington University and the veteran of several presidential campaigns. Greg, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks, Wilton. It's good to be back.
How are you faring in the midst of all this stuff?
Well, you know, it's funny what you just said about wanting to turn it off, and it's sort of frightening to me to realize that I feel the same way as often as not. This has been just the strangest and most, in many ways, disconcerting presidential election cycle that I certainly can remember, and I've been through a few of them, as you know.
Yes. You know, it's been interesting, Greg, to watch some big names in the GOP distance themselves from this summer's convention. Jeb Bush, John McCain, among others, said they're not going to the convention. And this is a fascinating moment for the party, even as outsiders like Donald Trump condemn the so-called party establishment. Some of the most establishment figures in the GOP seem to be saying the convention process itself has been lost. What are your thoughts about all that?
There is probably no single better way to get a sense of just how confusing and disturbing this whole process is than what you're talking about. And it's not just the John McCain's of the world. I mean, the Speaker of the House put out a statement, I think, sometimes this week, urging Republican office holders to go to the convention. What a strange thing for the Speaker of the House to have to say, particularly for members of the Senate who are up for election. Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire is talking about not going. I think Kirk is talking about not going. So it's a real problem. Nobody knows not only what's going to happen at the convention, but who's going to control it, what the process is going to be like, and certainly the question of floor fights and so on and so forth is something that hasn't been this real in a very long time, probably since 1976.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion regarding the way Ted Cruz has been able to gain delegates by understanding the process in different states, while Donald Trump shouts about being cheated. What does this tell us, Greg, about each candidate and as well about the process itself?
Well, it's interesting that after the New York primary the other night, Donald Trump was not out there talking about how unfair the process is, because he did very well on Tuesday night. But this is indicative of sort of where we are. And I think we see this on both sides right now. These rules were in place long before these folks actually got engaged and started the process. This is the way it's done. And I think that what we see on the Republican side is the fact that the Cruz organization is, in fact, a formidable organization. They have been playing by the rules with regard to these delegates and doing exactly what they need to do to win delegates. I think that Trump thought that he could win this thing on the force of his personality early on, and never occurred to him that he was going to have these kinds of issues. And clearly it didn't occur to his relatively inexperienced senior staff that he had pulled around him. Now, all of a sudden, we see Trump sort of surrounding himself with the Paul Manafort's of the world who understand the process and are able to deal with it. So the other thing that's disturbing, I think, is the incredible lack of understanding on the part of the American people, of voters, about how this works. Complaints about how everyone should have an opportunity to vote in the primaries and so on and so forth. Well, that's actually not true. This is a party function. This is not a general electional sort of operation. And there are rules to these things. And to be complaining about the rules at this point is a little childish, as far as I'm concerned.
In all the noise of sensationalistic campaign coverage, what's going on in the Republican Party that really bothers you in terms of the whole health of our democracy?
Well, I think that we can talk about it from the Republican side, and I think to some extent it may be becoming true on the Democratic side, which is unfortunate. One of the things that we have seen through most of this process is the focus on personality and name-calling on the Republican side, which does nobody any good. And on the other side, we have seen up until recently, I think, a relatively issue-based debate. I think that has changed somewhat in the last few weeks, which is unfortunate. But part of this, obviously, is the question of how this thing comes about. What are the mechanics of this thing, and how the candidates manage to position themselves to win the nomination. But what happens afterwards?
Mm-hmm.
Two of these folks are going to be presented to the American people as nominees for president. How much damage gets done to that person between now and then is an important question. And I think the bigger question is how much damage is done to the democratic process as we look at if, in fact, the numbers hold and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton end up as nominees. This will be the first time in the history of polling where we have two major party nominees who are, as we say, underwater in terms of public perception.
Mm-hmm.
Their negatives in both cases are higher than their positives. And this is absolutely unheard of. What does this say for governing after the election in November? I don't know.
Well, let me ask you one other question on the GOP campaign. Are there things the media simply aren't paying attention to in the GOP campaign that they surely should be covering?
Oh, sure. I think, first of all, for the lack of serious discussion of some of the issues that we're facing, that has been almost entirely ignored by the media, simply because of the presence of this larger-than-life character, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He has managed to stage-manage this process pretty much from the beginning, and this has been much more about sensationalism, quotability, those kinds of things, and rarely has it gotten down, I think, to serious discussion of issues. And that really continues. We keep waiting for Donald Trump to begin to act presidential, as he keeps saying he's capable of doing, but it just doesn't happen. So the media bears a great deal of responsibility, I think, for how they're covering this and what we're hearing. And I think that's what you and I and many other people are just disgusted about and mm-hmm. makes it so difficult for us to really pay attention to the news coverage of these things.
Well, Greg, let's shift now to the Democratic campaigns. Do you think the media portrayal of the gloves are off combat between Clinton and Sanders is accurate?
Well, if we look back over the past year, we remember that, when this whole thing started, we thought that basically we were going to have a very boring campaign on the Democratic side. Basically, it was going to be a coronation of Hillary Clinton, and it turns out to have been anything but that. I think that's true on one side and not on the other. I think that the Clinton campaign is at the point now where they need desperately to turn to the general election. And you heard that in mm-hmm. Clinton's speech after winning the New York primary. She's been focusing more and more on Donald Trump as the presumptive nominee on the Republican side. For the Sanders people, it's a very different situation, though, because they need to keep that sense of urgency alive in order to keep their constituency alive and focusing on this race. You know, this is roughly the point at which Hillary Clinton went to her staff 8 years ago and said, let's face it, Barack Obama is going to be the nominee. We need to turn away from direct attacks on Obama and begin to figure out how to sort of put this together so that we don't endanger Barack Obama as a candidate in the general election.
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication yet that that's happening on the part of the Sanders campaign. There seems to be still a real effort to continue, I think, a heightened level of attacks on the Clinton candidacy without regard to what happens after the nomination is in place.
Are there aspects of the race for the Democratic nomination that are getting lost in the coverage that we're seeing, that the media simply are not focusing on?
I think that the media has begun to look a little bit more closely at the two candidates and their positions, and there have been some good stories written of late that are beginning to address some of that. I think we sort of have the opposite challenge here on the Democratic side in that there has been a lot of talk about issues over the course of the month. But I think what the media often does in its search for the horse race kind of stories, they tend to avoid the stories about actually the similarities that exist, how close the candidates are on most of these issues. And I think you can say that across the board. I can't think of a single issue that philosophically that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders disagree on. It's sort of what we do and how we get there. And this is not unusual. This was the same situation again back to 2008 between Clinton and Obama in this process. But there's little attention to that because the horse race stories are much more interesting and much more fun to write. I think the media is so happy to have the fact that Sanders did so well because they got all these stories to write that they wouldn't have had an opportunity to write if he had not caught on the way he did. So that's that distinction, I think, on the Democratic side.
I'm curious, Greg. We've spent a lot of time this campaign cycle bemoaning how none of the old rules apply anymore. There's been very real damage done, and I think that's hard to deny, but is there anything positive that's come out of the changes that we've seen? Is there a benefit to the weakening of the party system, of outsider candidacies, and all the rest of it?
Here's what I think the light at the end of the tunnel might be. I think what we're seeing now is an appalling lack of understanding of how the process works. And, you know, we saw this, we go back to the fight over Obamacare in the House and Senate several years ago. And I think one of the things we realized then is as the legislative process was playing out and much more under a microscope than it used to be, one thing that became clear, I think, was that a vast majority of the American people have no understanding of how the legislative process works. And I think we're now seeing the same thing with regard to the electoral process. This is not to say that things might need to be changed, but people wanting to change the rules halfway or two-thirds of the way through the process don't make any sense. What I hope is that what we end up with is that the spotlight on the process helps over time, and I'm talking probably the next 3 years or so, to engage people in a discussion about exactly how this process should work, and that maybe the result of this awareness that people really are not clear on what this process is or what it's intended to do, how it works, may lead to a serious reconsideration of how we do things and of civic education. I happen to be a big proponent of improving our civic education in this country, both in the schools and outside the schools, because I think we are abysmally ignorant of how the process works and is supposed to work.
Yeah. One of the concerns I always have about these election cycles is what happens the day after the election, and what condition is our nation in at that point? And I think you are waving the red flag saying, let's don't so destroy this cooperation that's needed in a democracy just to win an election.
Yeah, and I think that we are closer to that unfortunate situation than we've been in a very, very, very long time. Again, we remember how contentious the battle on the Democratic side for the nomination was in 2008, but how quickly the two candidates came together and eventually brought their folks together to unite around the nominee. I think that it's going to be a real challenge on the Republican side because you have some serious, serious differences, more than I've seen in a very long time, between various segments of the Republican Party. And I think we have folks at the top of that debate right now who are not acting probably in the best interest of what happens to the country after the nominations and the general election. That's what really kind of frightens me.
Greg LaBelle is Assistant Professor of Political Management at George Washington University, where he is the director of the Semester in Washington Politics Program and the Native American Political Leadership Program. A veteran of several presidential campaigns over the years, Greg has also served in several leadership roles at Interfaith Alliance. As always, friend, it's good to hear your voice, good to learn from your wisdom, and thanks for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
It's great to talk with you as well, Welton. Thanks.